What is Capitalism and Socialism in America Today? We are honored and humbled again to have in the studio Dr. Jerome Hyler, who has a PhD in political science. He's written several books, and he is going to help us break down the misinformation that has been disseminated through the mainstream media about what we perceive as socialism in America today. Like I said, this is part three. If you want to go back to our prior parts or prior shows, you can go to our website, or you can go to Facebook, and or you can go to Block Talk Radio U.S. National Politics to listen to the prior shows. So today is the last part of part three, and we're going to focus on socialism with Dr. Hyler, and we'd like to welcome him into the studio. Good evening, Doctor. How are you?
Good evening, Chauncey. Thank you for having me once again to round out our discussion of capitalism and socialism.
I think it's very important that we try to get as much information and inform the public and educate them on where we are. I don't think mainstream media does a good enough job with informing and educating the people. They spend more time.
They can't.
They can't do a
good job. It would defeat their purpose.
Yes, but be it as it may, we'd like to jump in here and give the American people what they like. I have a couple of questions I'd like to ask you to continue our conversation. In the State of the Union address,
Hello?
In this,
go ahead.
Doctor, are we having technical difficulties? Can you hear me?
I do now.
Okay. The question that we are asking is, in a State of the Union address, President Trump assured us not be a socialist country. How confident are you that the president is right about that?
Well, that depends on what you mean by socialism, what you think it is. Many, I hear, are warning that a full-blown socialism, the kind that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders recommend, will turn America into the hellhole that is today's Venezuela, or that was the old Soviet Union or North Korea today. I cannot see America being turned into that kind of place. Americans love their country, and they cherish the freedoms and opportunities their country affords them. Although I admit, in the hustle and bustle of daily life, they take their precious liberties for granted. But they will never put up with the deprivations the people in those countries have to endure. Americans will say, oh, no, not in my country, you don't. When they are most threatened, like 9/11, and the threat of living free and living secure was really in danger, and they felt that danger viscerally because of 3,000 murdered, they woke up. Look at the patriotism. No one understood where that patriotism came from. Flags everywhere. And I live in New York, so I can certainly attest to the spirit of unity and patriotism that was displayed in the days after 9/11. So, no, I don't think Americans will submit to that kind of dictatorship. But, of course, that's not the only type of socialism there is in the world.
Yes, I would have to agree with you. That would be very, very challenging for the Bernie Sanders and the AOCs to try to change the direction of this country and a paradigm shift so dramatic. I agree with you. I don't think that the country would stand for it, and a perfect example of that is 9/11. What are the different forms of socialism in the world today, and what is the common denominator What is it that marks a socialist country as such?
Great question. There is totalitarian socialism as practiced in North Korea under the Kims, communist China, Russia, Russia today. It's still a totalitarian state run by Vladimir Putin and his commissars. In Venezuela, first under Hugo Chavez, that was a totalitarian state and still is under Nicolas Maduro. But then there are non-totalitarian socialist countries like Britain, Norway, Sweden, Denmark. These nations practice what we call appropriately democratic socialism. They are known as social democracies. What do all socialist countries have in common? Whether they allow free speech and expression and hold fair democratic elections or not, they engage in income or wealth redistribution. They pursue policies that benefit some citizens, but at other citizens' expense. Some are helped, others are harmed, and government does the redistributing.
Well, you know, that's really amazing. You know, you have really enlightened me on socialism and capitalism in America, and even I have a son that's a business student graduating this year in Rutgers Business, and we talked about capitalism and socialism. And as we're learning today, there are so many different dynamics to socialism and capitalism, and as you've identified around the world, the various countries. But that sounds very broad and even vague. Can you break it down a little bit in more specificity, if you will?
Sure. The opposite of socialism is freedom. The key issue that determines how much of a state or how completely a state is socialist is the question, what is the status of property in that state? A free country respects private property. There, every individual is able to gain, keep, use, trade, or otherwise dispose of his freely acquired possessions. However much he accumulates is his to dispose of as he pleases. Property is private. It's his. A socialist country may allow individuals to choose their fields of employment. They can start whatever kind of business they would like or work at this or that trade. However, for all practical purposes, the profits, salaries, and wages individual amass belong not really to them, but to society at large. Because others are entitled to, say, affordable housing, cradle-to-grave medical care, college tuition, a guaranteed minimum income, as is being proposed today, the people's political leaders have the authority to decide how much anyone can keep in profits, in salaries, in wages, and how much government may take away in order to give to others who have a title, a claim, and a right to the just fruits of other people's labor. That is what demarks a socialist country to the extent that it is socialist.
Wow. So what's in common in all of this is a desire to assist the relatively poor at the expense of the relatively rich and successful?
Or
is it that
entirely.
What's so...
Let me start like this. Socialism does more than redistribute wealth. It may also impose regulations that also interfere with the rights of ownership, interfere with the idea of private property. Rent control laws, tell landlords how much they are allowed to charge for the apartments they own, since their tenants, according to socialist idea, the tenants are entitled to quote unquote affordable housing. Employees generally are not free to engage in voluntary contractual agreements with their workers. They are made to offer minimum wages, made to restrict the number of hours their employees can work. Again, this is not transferring wealth per se, taxing some in order to give subsidies or benefits to others, but it is how government does control the otherwise private property rights of employers, of landlords. And now the latest demand from socialists in America is the demand for paid maternity leave, that government feels it has the right to tell every employer having so many employees that they are obligated to pay their employees for maternity leave.
Do you think that's an overreach of government?
A tremendous overreach of government and a violation of the freedom our founding fathers were hoping to bequeath to us. So you can begin to see the extent to which socialism has seeped into America's political culture. I don't think we have time to go into the reasons and justifications and societal costs of adopting these kinds of policies, but where they are adopted, we are witnessing socialism in action.
So I have to ask you a couple of questions to digress for a second here. So a lot of people think that, and bear with me for a second, we live in a capitalistic society. We live in a democracy society. We live in a country. We live in a republic. But the more I listen to you share information, educate us, the more I wonder if America are all of those things. Hence, I want to call America a welfare state.
That is exactly the right term to use.
And I never looked at it that way until beginning to do shows with you and listening to you and share about the difference in capitalism and socialism in different countries. And, you know, so if we live in a welfare state, subsequently, this is a socialist country, and the title of it is welfare state.
That's exactly
versus,
right.
Versus totalitarian socialism or the other type of countries that have adopted socialism. We disguise it in this country.
Well, the welfare state is simply what we call socialism in America. Socialism in England is called democratic socialism, and in the Scandinavian countries, that's democratic socialism. In America, we also practice, to a very large extent, but not completely, we practice democratic socialism, only it goes by the name the welfare state. But it is the exact same thing, Chauncey, you are so correct. It is the exact same thing as democratic socialism. It is democratic socialism, but nobody ever wanted to introduce the term into our vocabulary, no political parties, because socialism has images of the Soviet Union or Communist China, which are also socialists, but they are totalitarian socialists. We are democratic socialists, and the best term to use to describe it is the welfare state.
Wow. Awesome. You know, we definitely want to have you on for more shows. We're going to have to cover a lot more area. However, if you can you offer some examples of how corporate welfare policies fit into the definition of socialism?
That's very good. Now, when most people talk about socialism, they are generally referring to programs and a desire on the part of government to assist the relatively poor at the expense of the relatively rich. Socialism assumes that the rich have a responsibility of helping those less fortunate than themselves, and government has the ultimate responsibility to make sure the relatively rich help the relatively poor by taxes and rent control and all of these methods. However, we make a mistake and we don't identify what it is we're looking at in society if we only think of welfare state as helping the relatively poor at the expense of the relatively rich. Because that's social welfare, yes. But long before the social welfare state arose in America, and that would be about the Progressive Era and the New Deal, of course, and then the Great Society with Lyndon Johnson in the 60s. But long before the social welfare state arose in America, there were various species of corporate welfare. If socialism consists of policies that transfer wealth from some segments of society to others, it also covers policies that may benefit some businesses or industries also at the expense of others. So the legislators of a given country are empowered to pick winners and losers. That's necessarily what they are doing in engaging in these redistributive policies. Well, there is nothing to say that the winners of socialism's lottery will be poor. They may just as well be successful multi-million dollar industrial, commercial, financial, or agricultural interests. Political policies that can benefit them include, protective tariffs, monopoly grants, government subsidies of every imaginable description, privileges and immunities that are written into law, even easy money policies. So that is how corporate welfare can be defined. And when we think of the American welfare state, we have to realize that it includes both the social welfare and the corporate welfare elements of the thing.
So we will never be able, in the political sense, to cut social welfare, because then those, if I may, on the left, are going to cut off corporate welfare or holler about the imbalance.
Hey, I'd make the trade. I'm willing to give up corporate welfare if they'll give up social welfare. Matter of fact, in my book, that would be a perfect solution. Of course, they close their eyes to corporate welfare. As a matter of fact, progressive politicians benefit from corporate welfare since they need those corporate interests, those lawyers, those lobbyists, to fund their reelection campaigns and to help finance their ambitions to climb the high ladder of power in this country. So it's not that they really object to corporate welfare, although they're always decrying the wealthy. It's that they want to preserve social welfare and expand social welfare as the New Green Deal does, as a universal base income does that they're proposing, and all of the rest of it that would bring a full-blown socialism and absolute catastrophe to our country. And the millennials are on the march, and that is why Americans need to be educated, especially to the nature of socialism, because it is a threat like none other.
Wow. Social welfare has really undermined generations in our urban areas.
Absolutely. welfare harms most the very people it pretends to help.
Yeah. It's very sad.
Yeah, one of my favorite historical quotes is by William Boudicca, and he said, "You cannot help men permanently by doing for them what they could and should do for themselves." I think that has a lot of wisdom. There's a lot of wisdom in that statement, and that's what is wrong with social welfare programs and policies. No one ever got rich on social welfare.
Except the lawyers, the businesses that accept the food stamps. People do make money off of welfare, but it's not those that they purport to say they want to help.
Oh, that is very, very true. That is so true. The politicians make out on all fronts. Here they are, compassionate, claiming to help the needy, and actually they're helping the bottom line of all the corporations that supply the needy with their services and their goods, with their EBT cards and everything. And we pay through the nose, the average American, for all of those benefits given to the so-called needy and given to all of the special interests that furnish desks and printers and computers to all the bureaucracies that administer these social welfare programs. But, and Chauncey, time is short, I really want to make the point that we should be just as appalled and just as opposed to corporate welfare. As a matter of fact, I would go after the corporate welfare, because that is corruption. That is political corruption on such a huge scale. And what makes corporate welfare corrupt and these counterfeit capitalists who want to avoid the risks of the free market and count on government to eliminate those risks, what is corrupt about it? When Congress confers special benefits on some, it necessarily denies equal justice under law to all. And the political system becomes something you can sell to the highest bidder. And that, too, is a grave danger. And the people themselves will not object to a campaign to do what Donald Trump came to Washington to do, drain the swamp. And that swamp is as much a part of socialist America as is the social welfare programs and bureaucracies.
Yes, Donald Trump has had some challenges as a result.
He's only one man. Because of the beauty of the Constitution that our founders bequeathed us, in our system, there is no dictator. There is no one man who can do it. Legislation is required, and that involves the party system, and that is also why it is so important for Americans to wake up and educate themselves to the nature of capitalism and the real nature of socialism. As I've told you, Chauncey, what we are offering the American public is a perspective, a political and historical perspective in the weeks to come, unlike any other available today.
And I thank you for being a part of the show.
I thank you.
Coming on and helping us to spread the word and to the American people, because it's very important that we know where we are as a country, where we came from, and where we're going to go. I also want to remind our listeners that we're going to have Dr. Heiler on our show next Tuesday at 6 o'clock, and that is going to be the beginning of a three-part series of Why Leaders Lie. You can please call into the show at 646-668-8983 to listen to the show, or you can go to our link at Blog Talk Radio, U.S. Politics, U.S. National Politics. Also, you can find us on Facebook at U.S. National Politics 101, and you could follow us on Twitter. Next week, yeah, like I said, we're going to have the show starting on why leaders lie. And this has been a very, very powerful three-part series of socialism and capitalism in America. If you want to listen to the prior shows, part one, part two, part three, you may. You can also visit our blog at U.S. National Politics at Blogger. At blogspot.com.
Can I add something?
Please do.
Do we have time to add something? Okay. I just want to make the ironic point that because corporate welfare begins in the very beginning of our country, I would say, and I have written, that the origins of the American welfare state can be traced to the second bill signed into law by our first president. The Tariff Act of 1789 was expressly designed to benefit domestic manufacturers, but at the expense of farmers and planters. Those tariffs made goods coming from abroad more expensive and allowed the manufacturers, infant industries they were called, to raise their prices and raise their profits as well. But farmers and planters had to pay more for the tools, utensils, weapons, textiles that they bought, seaport merchants, shipbuilders, and thousands of Americans employed in the maritime trades. They suffered due to the slowdown of transatlantic trade. So that was a part of corporate welfare right from the beginning. And that
was that a part of Alexander Hamilton?
Yes, it was. But actually, the bill was passed through Congress by the Speaker of the House of Representatives at the time, who was James Madison. And then Hamilton built on the corporate welfare policies subsequently when he was made Secretary of Treasury. But if you think of it like this, if you take this perspective, you have to conclude that America's first socialists were also many of her capitalists who ran to government and lobbied for these kind of policies that would benefit them in the name of the general welfare, but at the expense of many other segments of society.
We want to thank you, Dr. Professor Dr. Jerome Hyler, PhD in political science, for coming on our show once again and giving us an educational breakdown of why socialism and capitalism
exist, and
our history of
eagerly awaiting our next conversation.
Thank you very much, Doctor. I want to thank all of our listeners for listening today. This is U.S. National Politics Blog Talk Radio. Our guest today was Dr. Jerome Hyler. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We want to say thank you again, and please join us every Tuesday at 6 o'clock for another live show on how we are trying to educate America on politics in America today. Thank you very much. Have a good evening, all.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome. This is U.S. National Politics. I'm your host, Chauncey Brown. We have another wonderful show for you this evening. This is